We are trying Zoom for the first time, so please bear with us if there are some teething troubles. Today, I would like to touch upon two or three different aspects related to the teaching. The first is this obsession with trying to control one's life, different aspects related to the teaching. That starts dropping away. The first is this, I don't know why I'm hearing my own voice. I would like to call him a sage. He was quite a radical person in Mumbai. I think he passed away around the same time as Nisargadatta Maharaj, and he was the Aghori Vimalananda. And there were two sayings of his. Sorry. There were two sayings of his which impacted me deeply. One was, never make the mistake of telling nature what you want from her. Let her give you what is best for you out of the endless bounty of her unfathomable love. The second quotation of his was, anytime you try to impose your will on the universe, you run the risk of creating a new karma whose repercussions may follow you for years or for lifetimes. When you fail to live with reality, reality inevitably comes to live with you. Both these statements point to the degree of the sense of doership with which we operate in our lives. And when one relaxes into the teaching, and the teaching is lived, one relinquishes control over this aspect of living, and one goes with the flow like H2O. The stronger the sense of doership in the me, the stronger the me will exercise control over life, and therefore, the stronger the suffering. I saw a movie yesterday on Netflix. The title is The Same Kind of Different as Me. That's the title of the movie. And it is about a wealthy couple, a rich lady who started looking after the homeless people. And then she passes away young because of an illness. So at her prayer service, they invite one of the homeless people to give a speech, the main character in the movie actually. And he says to an audience which is full of very wealthy people, because the couple was wealthy in the movie. He said, one thing that I have realized is that everybody here is homeless, not just the homeless. And my teacher, Rameshri, would say something similar, that we are all eventually going home, which is where we came from. That is what we have in common. Now, how pleasant or unpleasant this journey home is going to be depends on our attitude to it. And our attitude to it depends on our attitude to the other, whoever the other may be. And keeping this in mind, there's a line in A Course in Miracles which I would like to read out, which echoes this sentiment exactly. The Holy Spirit's temple is not a body, but a relationship. That is the crow coming for its water. The Holy Temple resides in a relationship. I had read one of Ramesh's earlier books called Experiencing the Teaching. I'm not sure it's available now, in which Rameshji mentions that he was deeply impacted. In fact, he used the word stunned by a sentence which Nisargadatta Maharaj spoke in one of his satsangs. And Rameshji was there. And he said he was so stunned that it was so obvious that Maharaj turned around and looked at him, realizing something had happened. And Maharaj had used the phrase, "We are all reversing into the future. We are all reversing into the future." Now, when I read this in this book, Experiencing the Teaching, and someone is asking Ramesh to explain what this means, I was also not able to grasp this statement fully, though it impacted me tremendously also. And so one Sunday morning before the talks at his home, I went to Rameshji and into his room, and I said, "This statement, reversing into the future, could you explain to me in very simple terms?" And he said, "It's very simple." He said, "We think that A leads to B, B leads to C, and C leads to D in our lives. This happened, therefore this happened, therefore this happened, and so on. But," he said, "it is actually the opposite. For D to happen, C had to happen. And for C to happen, B had to happen. And for B to happen, A had to happen." In other words, for us all to be confined at our homes right now, the virus had to happen. And therefore, Rameshji would say the arrow of destiny is double pointed, not just going in one direction like this, where we think cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. I did this, so this happened. I did this, then that happened. Now it reverses. And one starts seeing in one's life, wherever one is right now, it happened because all the prior events to it had to happen. And with this kind of seeing, the obsession of the me, that I made this mistake, this was my fault, and therefore this happened, and this was the outcome, that obsession starts dissolving. And the dissolution of that obsession is the job of the teaching. That is why Rameshji would say that you cannot tell the ego to kill itself. Many teachers and masters and teachings say, "Kill the ego, kill the ego." Why would the ego agree to cooperate to kill itself? It doesn't make sense. But what this teaching does on its own is it destroys the ego. Sometimes overnight, sometimes gradually. That is why I refer to it as slow poison for the thinking mind. The thinking mind, which is obsessed with an imaginary future or the dead past. When that obsession starts dissolving, one is more centered and present to the present situation. There was a cartoon strip in America decades earlier, which once again Rameshji would use that example in his talks, in his satsangs, of these two characters, Mutt and Jeff, and they are driving the car up the hill. And it is an extremely steep incline, extremely steep. So one of them is driving the car, let's say Mutt, and Jeff is really sitting by his side, sweating away that will they make it to the top. So both are quiet. Finally, they reach the top. And Mutt looks at Jeff and says, "My God, Jeff, I actually wondered whether we would reach the top or the car would roll back right down." And Jeff tells Mutt, "Oh, that would not have happened because I had pulled the handbrake up." That is the thinking mind. So fearsome of what would happen that it loses sight of reality. The thinking mind is that handbrake, which also stops us from being ourselves, the way God has made us, with the attributes of our genetics and conditioning. And we end up wearing masks as far as the society is concerned. And we change these masks. We wear different masks for different relationships. For friends we want to impress, we wear one mask. Family, we wear another mask. Strangers, another mask. Now, sitting at home, we are presented with the opportunity to put down all these masks. That is why we all enjoy deep sleep so much, because we are not wearing a mask in deep sleep. I would like to give an example of something related to what is currently happening and how we can see the functioning of the ego with a sense of doership and how the dramas play out. Now, as you know, as we in India know, the Prime Minister has stated that at 9 p.m. on Sunday evening, 5th of April, he has requested the citizens of India to light a lamp for 9 minutes at their window or at their door. Now, as soon as this came up, a variety of opinions started emerging on the internet and on WhatsApp groups. The University of WhatsApp, as it's popularly known as now. Those who accused him of being superstitious and so on and so on. And those who thought it was a great moment to show solidarity. This is duality. Two sides of the coin. Two differing positions. That is how it plays out. There is no problem with the design of duality. But what happens is, which I incidentally was witness to in one of these WhatsApp groups. So someone posted a message about how nice it would be to light lamps, etc. And someone was completely against the idea. And they got into a war of words. This is the suffering. Trying to not only project our view onto other people, convincing them what is right and what is wrong to do. But then when each person starts doing that, what happens is the action-reaction loop is perpetuated. What Vimlananda would refer to as the cycle of karma. You are getting into this, you've taken a position, dug your heels in, and now anyone who says something the opposite, you get into a fight. But to just accept that people are entitled to their point of view and you do what you think and feel you should do. It is not that the sage will not have a point of view. The sage will also decide whether he would want to light the lamps or would not want to light the lamps. But to engage in banter and abuse and saying that this is ridiculous, what is the Prime Minister doing? He should be looking at bigger schemes to save the country and so on and so forth. You may feel that within, but when you start imposing this on others, this is imposing control. You are trying to control how others should start feeling. And what was a simple situation on the basis of which one takes one's decision based on one's programming becomes this whole game played by the ego of who is right and who is wrong. That is what happens. And then we take positions we get identified with. So we have to see. Then someone will say, oh, what's wrong with all this? It's not causing me any suffering. Even if I engage with people and they get upset and then I get upset, it is suffering. Because the ego is creating this structure for itself. And when it is assaulted, when someone puts forward a different point of view, it cannot bear it. That is why Rameshji would say, we should all agree to disagree without being disagreeable. We should all agree to disagree without being disagreeable. And then life flows so much smoother. Someone sent me a message saying that there is so much fake news floating around nowadays. And that I used to forward these messages to my friends and all, and some of them would say, this is fake news, that is fake news. I don't know what to believe in. But with the understanding, one knows that in any case, the bedrock of existence is fake news in that sense. Everything changes. Everything is transient. Everything is temporary. Pleasures, pains, ups, downs, evanescent. Fleeting. So one is now less attached to all this that is moving across the screen of our consciousness, because it is the attachment that has created the suffering. Nothing seems that real anymore. And that is why Rameshji would say that when you have the sense that nothing truly matters anymore, neither the pleasures nor the pains, then one has reached a very deep place in the understanding. So now, if there are any questions, I would be happy to take them.
So you said to agree to disagree without being disagreeable. How do we do that?
The whole teaching is about that. When you accept that nobody truly does anything, everyone is an expression of the divine, of consciousness, just as you are, you will understand that they are completely entitled to their view and their position, just as you are. So if they say something which you do not agree with, you will agree to disagree. You will no longer try to convince this person that your view is the right view. That obsession starts dropping away. So, you may state your point of view, you may state the cases in favor for your point of view, but then you leave it to God. You leave it to what is, and you agree to disagree without being disagreeable, which means you don't blame and condemn for someone for not sharing your point of view. You accept that just as I am an object and instrument in consciousness, so is the other. So you don't take this position of a higher ground, which you used to earlier, saying, my way is the right way. That is what drops.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Could I ask a question, please?
Sure.
So many dying of coronavirus now, 600, 700 in a day. how is their destiny? If it's predestined, how is this karma interlinked?
Whose karma?
Theirs.
As we have seen historically, millions of lives have been lost not only to epidemics, but to the Crusades, for example, the Holocaust, for example. In fact, on a far larger scale than what is happening now. And as the masters have said, that your first breath and your last breath is already destined. And the mechanism through which one is supposed to exit, so to speak, is predetermined. And it reminds me of the time, you see, Rameshji was 92 when he passed away. And in his younger years, smallpox was a very big issue. And in his earlier books, he would say that human beings see the smallpox as a threat to human existence, but nobody asks the smallpox for its point of view. Because all the species in manifestation, millions and millions of species created by the one source, but we humans are viewing it through our prism and seeing that this is right and this is wrong, this should happen and this should not happen. And there are millions who are dying every day, their deaths due to cancer, HIV and all these other diseases. But now what has emerged in consciousness right now, which is the focal point, is the coronavirus. And events are transpiring. Scientists are looking for solutions and the Leela will play itself out. And of course, we all do what we think and feel we should do, which is stay indoors right now. So the whole game is already being played out on the screen of consciousness.
Thank you.
Someone had asked me a question, I think the last time, about the subject of addictions. And Vimlananda had said something very nice. He said, if at all you want to be addicted to God. And God in Jnana Yoga is consciousness. God is the source. So when one is investigating, following a teaching diligently, with earnestness and sincerity, as Maharaj would say, then one is addicted to consciousness. And it is such a beautiful journey, full of grace and simplicity, that one starts viewing everything in one's life through this prism of a-dvaita, not two. It appears to be, but it is not. And that is when the me versus you becomes me and you.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Gautam, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. As you said earlier, Maharaj used to say, unexpected happens seldomly and unexpected happens oftenly and expected happens seldomly. So how do we correlate this with the law of attraction, wherein the law of attraction says the way we think, the things start following the stream and the things start happening in that way. So, you know, that's my question, like, how do we correlate this, both these things?
This is actually a topic, I think, for another talk. But the fact is, everyone's life experiences what Maharaj said. The expected seldom happens and the unexpected always does. This lockdown itself is a classic example of this statement. Now, where would the law of attraction be in reference to this situation? You see, having said that, if you look at what I consider the law of attraction, which is quite different from what is the generally understood notion of the law of attraction, the Mahavakyas of the Vedas are affirmations. Aham Brahmasmi, Tatvamasi. I am that. That is the affirmation. These are affirmations. Make no mistake. But with the law of attraction, generally what happens is the me retains itself as the center and projects its wants and desires outside and says, I want this, so I must attract it. In fact, it can strengthen the suffering of the me. So, as I said, this can be a very long discussion, which I think we should not get into it in this talk, but we can see both aspects. We can see the aspects where the law of attraction makes total sense, because it is true that we are all nothing but bundles of energy and vibration, and like attracts like. But the point is, which is the law which enhances the suffering for the ego with its sense of doership, and which is the law which mitigates that suffering? So it would be wonderful to explore this at another talk.
Gautamji, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Guru Vimalananda.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know a little more about him, and also if he has anything to do with Robert Svoboda, or they are two different people.
Yes, so Vimalananda was considered to be an Aghori. And Aghoris, were considered to be, as they say, the left path of God, the tantric practices in the cremation grounds, etc. Robert Svoboda had written 3 books on his experiences and his time with Vimalananda. So those are not books for everyone, because they are quite radical and can also shake up one's core beliefs, and some people are not also into the journey which Vimalananda was on. But what I took away from those 3 books, which are called Aghora 1, 2 and 3, was the dedication, the sincerity and the learnings which this man imparted, not only to Robert, but to his other disciples. So I was quite touched. And when I looked through parts which didn't resonate with me, I found such depth in his way of living. And as he rightly said, one very important point, he said, I like to give my disciples surprise tests. What is the point of announcing an exam 3 months in advance so that a student can prepare for it and then come out with flourishing colors? The test of the teaching is when you give a surprise test, because then you know how well the student is prepared. And that is exactly as Santosh mentioned earlier, Maharaj saying that the expected seldom happens, the unexpected always does. And so that was another beautiful pointer from him, that how prepared are we? What is our attitude to whatever we may come across in life? Because that determines nothing but our peace and equanimity.
Thank you, sir. Is there further reading apart from Aghora? I have read Aghora, but is there anything else on Swami Vimalananda that you can recommend? That'll be my last question.
No, I don't think there's anything beyond these 3 books as of now, but you could write to Robert Svoboda on his website and check with him.
Thank you.
I would like to read out a couple more sentences from A Course in Miracles, so please bear with me. How can you know whether you chose the stairs to heaven or the way to hell? Quite easily. How do you feel? Is peace in your awareness? Is peace in your awareness? Are you certain which way you go? And are you sure the goal of heaven can be reached? If not, you walk alone. Ask then your friend to join with you and give you certainty of where you go. That is why one's spiritual journey, especially for all of us, is a journey of interhuman relationships, because we are not sitting in our caves in the Himalayas. We are in cities, in towns, dealing with people all the time. And the subject of relationships, and especially the karmic makeup of relationships, on the subject of Rinanubandhan, I have found Shirdi Sai Baba, and in fact even Vimlananda has spoken about Rinanubandhan, the cosmic depth of relationships. Why some relationships in life don't make sense, most don't make sense, and the way out of the bandhan is the one sentence of the Buddha, which is, events happen, deeds are done, but there is no individual doer of any deed. If one can live that sentence, then the bondages snap. The bondages are broken because there is no longer an action-reaction loop being played out. And that is why Eckhart Tolle has said that even if one person in a relationship takes on the position of the witness, the drama will stop perpetuating itself. And if one has the total acceptance that no one truly does anything, then the bondage of relationships drop away. This is what the whole book A Course in Miracles is about. This is what my teacher's teaching was about. This is what is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And this path shows the way it is lived in one's life. That is the beauty of the teaching.
Hi Gautam, I have a question.
Yes.
So, can we conclude that we as we know ourselves to not really exist?
Sorry?
Can we conclude that I don't exist the way I know myself really?
You do exist in this phenomenal world, in this manifestation. You exist as a separate entity with a name and form. That is the mechanism of duality. But when the understanding happens that nobody truly does anything, neither myself nor others, then one starts seeing with an even vision. And when that even vision happens, then the strength of the ego based on doership starts subsiding. And in that sense, the ego with its sense of doership no longer exists. So you are right on that front, absolutely. Yet, you have to function in life as a separate entity with your own likes and dislikes. But when the understanding goes deep down that no one truly does anything, then the drama of the ego, that is Meenakshi, operating in life is finished. In that sense, Meenakshi does not exist. Because who is Meenakshi without her drama, without her stories? So very good question you have asked, Meenakshi. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for answering, Gautam. Thanks.
Hello, Gautam.
Hi, Dipesh.
Yeah. I want to ask you that from the real point of view, there is nobody a doer. But if we look from the relative point of view, when you say that everything is predetermined, so what could be the distance between the doer and the consciousness? For example, for an awareness or the consciousness to come into action, it has to take the shape of an individuality to do something. unless it takes the shape of an individual, it can't perform any action. Either it could be in the form of a thought, or it could be in the form of any kriya or anything. So,
yes, I get your question, Dipesh. And the answer is, and in fact, this question used to be asked to Rameshji in his satsang, so that's why I already know the answer.
Yeah.
Is yes, once we know we are not the doers, we still have to act as if we are the doers, knowing that God is the primary doer. So, the mechanism of life and of daily living is we have to still take decisions, take action, like we always did. But now what has happened is the sense of doership has been uprooted. So, we act as if we are the doers, but now we know that we are not. Now, what happens with that? With the sense of doership removed from the equation, the sting in relationships is gone. The sting in relationships, which was based on doership, is removed. The thorn is pulled out from the flesh. And that is what transforms the relationships. Because you have pulled out all the negativity in the form of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, blame, condemnation, and on and on and on. That has gone from the relationship. You still do what you are supposed to do, knowing that neither are you the doer, nor is the other. And the result is nothing but peace of mind.
Thank you.
Hello, can I ask a question? Can I ask a question, please?
Yes.
Okay. The question is, I started reading Bhagavad Katha for my parents since yesterday. And since yesterday, what I've realized that there's a lot of crying happening while I'm reading. Now, I have a question. The one way of looking at it is I still fail to be a witness because by being a part of it. Or the other way of looking at it is I'm allowing myself to be a part of it by crying, by whatever which is happening. So I don't know what is exactly the right thing to do. One way is looking at it, look at objectively whatever is happening. The other way is be a part of it, just loosen up. If you feel like crying, cry. What's the harm in that? You are reading Bhagavad anyway.
Absolutely. So, but the bottom line is that you are not crying. Crying is happening.
Okay.
So if crying is happening, let it happen.
True. True.
And when you really understand this, then more crying will happen. Because
yeah, actually true. True. Actually, yes.
Look, it's so beautiful. It is so touching, you know, because you see that not only crying, but every aspect of your emotions are just happening. Just happening. And so to try and change that is being unnatural.
Yes.
To allow it to happen is being natural. And missing the cry starts happening. That does not mean the crying will stop. The difference is that it will no longer be I am crying. It will be crying is happening.
Happening. Okay. Thank you.
Namaste, Gautam ji.
Namaste.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have recently read this, that sage Vasishtha says that in this world, whatever is gained by self-effort. Wherever failure is encountered, it is seen that there has been slackness of effort. But what is fate is fictitious and is not seen. So I'm totally confused. Earlier, I used to believe that there is no doer and events and things happen. But after reading this, I'm totally confused as to whether there is something called fate and self-effort is required or not required. Can you please clarify?
Now, do we know if Sage Vasishtha said this, or is someone who has written this is saying that Sage Vasishtha said this? You see? Self-effort is required. In the sense, if you refer to Nisargadatta Maharaj's teachings, he himself keeps telling people, please sit for an hour or two and meditate on your beingness. That is effort. You see, Ramana Maharshi has said, please inquire, who am I? Whenever you get the chance, inquire, who am I? That is effort. So effort is required. There is the sense in non-dual circles that I don't have to do anything. It will happen if it is supposed to happen. You see, that is kind of even the ego taking advantage of certain statements and turning it around for its benefit. Now, the point is, this self-effort is not your doing. There's a very important distinction here. Why? Because you yourself didn't choose to be on the spiritual journey. It happened. And most likely, an event in our lives, which was an event of suffering, has turned us on the path. Most likely. When we start questioning life and how life is playing out, that is the spiritual journey which we didn't start. You see? So in that sense, it was not our doing. But yes, Maharaj himself say that earnestness is the key. He sat for 3 years with what his guru said. His guru said, you are that. And for 3 years, he just sat abiding in his being and he got it. So of course, self-effort is required. But self-effort happens. What we do is we have an outcome in mind. And then we get frustrated when our efforts don't lead to that outcome. This is what we individually do. So the investment is on something we will get in an imaginary future. That is also not that it's not all right, but I'm clarifying the point of is required. Now in my own case, when my teacher said that everyone is an instrument through whom the same consciousness functions and everyone is functioning based on their genetics and programming, whatever happened from that day on when I visited his satsang, my relationships at work, my friendships, I started viewing the relationship through that prism. And it automatically fell into place for me. I didn't have to expend effort in trying to convince myself that everyone is an instrument through whom God's will happens. I saw it so naturally, like most people do. You can see how people are just playing out their own patterns and their conditionings. And very rarely it has something to do with you. It's just how they have been designed. So in that sense, that effort, so to speak, happens. You start seeing things in that light. So it is a very good question you have asked, because there's a lot of, especially in the Western world, this concept of I don't have to do anything. And it will happen if it is supposed to happen. Of course, it will happen if it is supposed to happen. But your own role will also happen in that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hello. Hi, Gautam. Hello. Hello. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, Gautam. First of all, my deep regards to you. And I have a very... I want to ask specifically... While you were talking about the Runanu Bandhana and you mentioned the name of the Vimla Nanda and Shirdi Sai Baba as well, in context of specifically relationship where, you know, two people are, you know, relationship, like any deep relationship, every relationship is a deep, relation. In term of, you know, karmic balance, you are talking about. So my question is that, you know, is it like Advaita says that, you know, everything is predetermined and, you know, predestined, and there is no, you know, there is only one, which is, you know, non-duality. So what is the difference between if everything is, you know, predetermined, then what is the free will? In term of, you know, in term of the relationship, in context of relationship, what's the difference between, then what's the free will if person, you know, yeah, that's my question actually.
Even if determined, predetermined, the fact is we don't know what it is that is predetermined. That is the Leela. And therefore, we have to act as if we have free will, knowing that, one, our free will is based on our genetics and conditioning, which we have not created. And two, we may exercise our free will, but the outcome is not in our control, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita. Act as if you have free will, knowing that the result is God's will. And in relation to relationships, as I just said now, with the understanding that nobody truly does anything, that transforms the relationship dynamic. When you accept that the person in front of you, the one you are concerned about in the relationship, is not the doer of his or her actions as much as you are not, that vision is what breaks the bondage in the relationship. The bondage in the relationship perpetuates how? When there is accusation, blame, and condemnation that you did this, so I hate you. With this understanding cuts off that dynamic. Because if you truly know that this person in front of you has been shaped by circumstances far beyond their control, right from childhood, not only their genetic blueprint they came with, but the conditioning their parents bestowed upon them, the environment bestowed upon them, and so on, based on which this person says things and does things just like you. When this vision is attained, the bandhan is what is snapped. You may still be with that person for the rest of your life, but the bondage is this accusation of you are the doer. And then the relationship heals. There is a healing in it. So I think we've crossed the 1 hour, and I'd like to end with just a couple of minutes of silence. We are still experimenting with this Zoom technology, and earlier we were with the YouTube live stream, and we will take a decision as to going forward in the coming week of the talk on Wednesday and then next Sunday, whether we stick to YouTube live stream or Zoom or do both. So get back to you on that. And meanwhile, I do wish for everyone who is here, who's watching this, that this view, this seeing through the third eye, which is nothing esoteric, but the eye of knowledge, not the eyes of duality, seeing through the third eye of knowledge, of jnana, seeing whatever transpires now during this phase we are all going through. Relationships are stressed out because people are within the same walls for an extended period of time. The future is unknown from an economic point of view. But the gift of the teaching now is that it brings in the element of witnessing. And that is a tremendous gift. So I do hope that whatever little bit one has taken away from these talks enhances this quotient of witnessing, which you cannot do. Witnessing happens. The ego cannot do the witnessing. The ego observes and judges. Witnessing has to be allowed to happen. Well.